Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What is it really like to be a private investigator? There's no limit to the examples we have from literature, movies, and TV. But what those exciting depictions don't show us is what it takes to prepare to work in the field. My guest today joined us from the University of North Texas Professional Development Institute, which this month welcomed the first students to its private investigator certification program. The 4.5-month course teaches everything from the techniques of research and surveillance to the ethics and legalities of detective work to how to operate from a business standpoint. Scott Belshaw is Chair and Executive Director of the Professional Development Institute at the University of North Texas. Tim Quinn is an instructor in the program with 19 years of experience in the field. Gentlemen, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, do most applicants to the program have a realistic understanding of what the job requires?
A lot of them get a lot of their information from TV, news, media, things, those type of resources. So the students we've had so far really haven't had they don't really understand really what the private investigation industry is about. So our program, that's what it's about. It's to give them that this is the reality of it. You know, the reality of being a private investigator is not necessarily just hanging out in bushes and, you know, climbing into trees and spying on people. There's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of, online type resources, a lot of research that you're doing now. The days of the old gumshoe walking down the street are gone. Now it's all electronic and it's all technical. So our program strives to train the students for that.
What is the ideal background that somebody comes to you with?
That's an interesting question. I don't think there's an ideal looking at the mix of students that we have. We see folks that have a wide range of both professional experience as well as personal experience. We have everything from teachers and housewives to professional license holders with military or police law enforcement experience in the group now. Having worked with Scott for so many years, I think one of the things that he looked for as an employer and I look for with partners is someone who's inquisitive, someone who wants to help other people solve problems. Obviously something that works in a lot of different professions, but in ours, that's the key. You want to figure out what the problem is and solve it for the person who's coming to you. So you look for that a lot.
People come to us with all sorts of problems as private investigators. And having have done it for so many years prior to getting into academia, it was one of those things where they didn't know what their problem was, but they knew they had a problem and they needed help. Instead of being a person that would, you know, just try to get their money or anything like this, it was like, how can I solve their problem? And that's what it is. This is a people field, talking to people. Because, again, you could have crazy cases, which I've had crazy cases over the years. But legitimately, these people have problems and they want these problems solved. And, again, they're coming to us to help solve these type of problems. I remember one of my first cases, I had a client come to me and he was, you know, afraid that his wife was cheating on him and things like this. And I found myself just being almost more of the counseling role and talking to him. And it really dawned on me after about 30 minutes of it is that's not what he was here to talk to me about. He was not here to get counseling for his marital problems. He was here for me to help him solve a problem. As soon as that light bulb clicked in, that's when I knew this is what it's all about.
It's really interesting in the course catalog. You point out right there that the vast majority of cases that a lot of private investigators work on are domestic and family cases. And this brings in a sort of a whole different level of sophistication and sensitivity that's required. Can you talk about that a little bit and how that would differ from, say, a background check on a potential employee?
Well, a good example would be in down in Houston a number of years ago, there was the Claire Harris case, the lady who was the dentist that ran over her husband, yes. One of the problems that we saw in the private investigation industry was is people would – private investigators would then when they film, say, cheating spouse type cases or things like this, they would contact the client and say, oh, your husband is maybe here at this hotel or your husband is here at this location, which in reality causes more problems than it really helps the client. Because, again, people are in such an emotional charged state. What happens when you pick up the phone, you call your client and say their husband or their wife is at this hotel? They're going to show up. So there's an ethic behind all of that. You know, the way we would do it is we would bring them back to the office then the following day or even a couple days later and then explain to them, here's what we found. Here's the evidence we found versus just placing them in a bad situation where we know they're going to. So there is a huge ethic to this business. And, you know, it's something that needs to be addressed. And it's something that really from a training perspective really needs to be hit on. And again, that's what our program strives to do.
In that first class, we talked about the sensitivities that are needed and the situations you find yourself in. In a case that I was on recently, it was a soon-to-be divorced father with three children from that marriage. The wife definitely suffering from alcoholism and a lot of different problems. And I went to him. I visited with him in his house with his children surrounding us and, you know, worked with him through some of the issues and developed a plan of action. So the term you use, sensitivity, is really, I think, the key to being a successful business person in this business, because you listen for the cues, you listen for the clues, and you don't necessarily try to oversell, don't necessarily try to build the hours up. You try to solve the problem. And it, one of the interesting things is, Scott and I talked about it before, is you end up, it almost feels like you're talking yourself out of business because you're working with them through. You go, well, we don't really need to spend 18 hours a weekend on this particular case because more than likely we're not going to find out what we're looking for just through a more selected, targeted set of hours or set of problem-solving tools. So sensitivity is one of the big keys in the business.
Is this dangerous work?
It can be dangerous. A lot of times it's just common sense. When you're running a company or you're a private investigator working for a company, it's common sense putting yourself in a bad situation. You know those feelings beforehand where if this isn't right, it's probably not – something's wrong going to happen. As a business owner as well as a manager of my own company, when I would hire employees or when I had employees, even Tim was an employee of mine, what I used to do is if I would tell him, if there was any time you ever fear that your life is in some sort of jeopardy, it's not worth it. It's not worth it to the client. It's not worth it to the cases. And especially, it's not worth it to my investigator. I would never do it. So it can be but it's generally not. It's generally not a very scary field to get into. It's because right now it's all technology based. Now it's private investigators aren't leaving their home that much anymore. They're running it out of all you need really is a computer or a laptop and internet access, and you can access a wealth of information online that a lot of times your clients, you know, don't necessarily can get. They can't get.
Is it that they don't know how to get it or that it's not available to the general public?
Well, generally it's not available to the general public. There's a lot of databases that are out there that are, but again, databases are about 65% accurate, which is you see some of them online, but they're not always very accurate. Private investigators do with licenses, because in the state of Texas you have to be licensed as a private investigator. It's licensed under the Private Security Board with the Texas Department of Public Safety. And you know, when you get a state license, what happens is then you have to – when you want to sign up for certain databases or certain – these type of companies to get this information, they require a copy of your license.
So you can go and you can sort of hang out a shingle and work on your own. You can work for a private investigation firm. But there's also corporate jobs in the field. Can you talk about those a little bit?
Sure. There's corporate jobs and there's application of this particular profession within the corporate realm.
Right.
I have a significant experience in human resources, and I've used intertwined both skill sets in many different situations. In a corporate field, I could definitely see that the most obvious would be in the security or in the loss prevention field. You could use them in the human resources or background field. Nowadays, with hiring being extremely complex in some situations, or if you're looking at either customer service, front-facing positions, financial positions, leadership positions in a company, taking the extra steps to do good quality background work for those hires makes all the difference in the world, especially in the market that we're in today. So you can take these skills, not only, let's say there's a loss prevention investigator position open in a company, and apply for that company and say, hey, I have the state licensing and the training behind me to put into that position. But you can also take those skill sets if you're a recruiter in a company or if you're simply in a position of management, managing other people too, and use these skill sets to help do your job better too. So there's a lot of different places I think you can use that in the corporate world.
So, Scott, what does it take to get certified in the state of Texas as a private investigator?
Basically, DPS requires that students or people who want to become private investigators have to have at least 3 years of investigative experience or a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. difference between our program does is we were able to get approval. We were able to get approval from DPS to – if the student completes – goes through our program, they don't necessarily need those 3 years of investigative experience. That's one of the reasons why our program is so wonderful, because we're bringing together the training and licensing in the same thing. Licensing is very important because, private investigation is a regulated industry in the state. And if, you know, private investigators get out there in the world and they start messing up and causing problems, you know, they can be sued just like anybody else. You know, private investigators are required to maintain a certain level of liability insurance, things like this, because like we were talking about background checks and things like this, they can go wrong. You know, when you give a background check for a company and they're wanting to hire somebody, however, there was no due diligence done on that case, or there was nothing, no information. The information that was collected was false, and the private investigator is negligent on that side, then yes, there's a huge problem there. And then, you know, the individual maybe doesn't get the job, or they possibly lose their job. So there's a damage there. So our industry is regulated over the past, and it's gotten better over the past probably 10 to 15 years. You know, 20, 25 years ago, it was just almost like the Wild West out there when it comes to private investigators. Anybody could just open up a magazine, look and say, I want to be a private investigator, and then just go out there and become a private investigator. Now with the tightening of the regulations and things like this to become one, it's become a wonderful career, people, you know, getting into this.
I was going to say there's a couple of different things that are exciting about the program. Scott, you brought them to bear, but the biggest part of our particular program is that it takes the professional education piece, and we worked with the professional security board or the private security board and actually put together a program that allows a person to work for 4.5 months on our educational program and get licensed. There's a difference between programs that are out there in the world today and ours, and that's the single difference. There are some large programs that are backed by universities and have professors that are face-to-face programs, and there's an incredible number of online programs that you can, you know, pay your dollars down and get a certificate at the end of however long it takes you to do that program, and then you have a piece of paper at the end of the program. Our program was designed with the Department of Public Safety to have face-to-face, instructor-led, high standard of courses that go through each specific module and talk about each specific piece of a private investigator's business and work product, so that we put out better investigators for the state to license and to insure. So,
because one thing we found that when I became a private investigator, when I started, I worked for probation down in Houston for so many years, but I didn't have the experience to run a business, number one. I didn't have the experience to what type of cases would I get. Say if I got a cheating spouse case, or I received a a call on a corporate investigation or a corporate background check, I really didn't know what to do because I worked in the government side of things. I qualified for the license. However, I just didn't have what it took to actually do the day-to-day job. I had to kind of learn on-the-job training. Our program bridges that gap. Our program teaches these students on-the-job training, shows the students, here's what it's like in the real world, here's the practical side of things. Even though they might be qualified, even if they have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, or they might even have had multiple years of experience in doing some sort of investigative work, what we do is kind of teach them, this is the reality of the business, this is what it's like, and this is how to run an industry. And we've gotten numerous support from DPS on this. They just believe it's a wonderful cause because they saw that gap of even our students that graduated from college with a degree. They're just not ready to get out there and run a business as well as become private investigators because of the day-to-day operations. And I didn't know that stuff. So I learned the stuff on the job. Now it's time. This program will bridge that gap. So for 4.5 months after they complete that program, they will have those skills to be able to run their business. They will have those skills to be able to do the day-to-day operations.
Scott Belshaw is with us. He's chair and executive director of the University of North Texas Professional Development Institute Private Investigation Certification Program. Tim Quinn is here as well. That's quite a mouthful. He's an instructor with 19 years of experience. We will resume our conversation in a moment. If you'd like to look up more information, you can find that at pdi.org, and you can call us at 1-800-933-5372.
Thank you.
Funding for Think comes from summer youth programs at SMU in Plano, where kids can create, design, and think their way to a memorable summer. Details online at smu.edu/summerfun.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. The University of North Texas Professional Development Institute has just launched its private investigation certification program. We are here with Scott Belshaw, who is chair and executive director, and Tim Quinn, an instructor in the program. We're talking this hour about what it takes to become a private investigator. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Do students have to prove that they have no criminal history or background in order to qualify for the program and therefore to be certified?
No, to be in the program, it doesn't matter. Licensing is a separate issue.
Yeah.
They have to meet the certain requirements for licensing, and licensing does have – DPS does have certain requirements for people with criminal background checks or certain criminal records. If it's a felony, it's a period of time they have to wait. If it's a certain misdemeanors, it's a period of time they have to wait and things like this. But to get in the program, no. Because our job is to train, is to give you the skills. You can go through the program and not be involved in licensing at all. I mean, there's a lot of skills you can learn. We're not getting licensed. Research background, the ethics of the business, the corporate stuff. I mean, there's just, the technology that we teach in our research methods class, the number two class, is just unreal. How to use the computer to find out so much information on people, which is something, even if you're a housewife and you don't want to become a private investigator, you can still learn these skills.
Sort of a terrifying thing for those of us who are not private investigators. What do you both think, candidly, having all this experience in the field, is the toughest thing to teach, even in the best classroom setting, that you learned through experience?
Yes, I think a lot of times teaching the students, as a professor at the University of North Texas in the Department of Criminal Justice, I get students over there that kind of learn at all different levels and things like this. These students I really enjoy because they're very professional. They're there because they want to learn. They're there not because, somebody else paid for their tuition or anything like this. They really are there to learn. I mean, we have students like Tim was talking about, teachers all the way up to – we have even in this new class, we have a retired airline pilot, so which is great. I mean, we've got a whole wide range of students that we have in our class, and these students are wonderful to teach because they're there and they really want to learn and they're excited about the field, but they understand there's a lot of myths to this field. So it's kind of like when we teach them all that different type of stuff, but they're really excited, and I love teaching this group.
As an instructor, I think the challenge really isn't going to be the receipt of the students, and the challenge is that they're going to face receiving the information. What I found in developing the coursework that I'm going to be teaching is making sure that it's relevant, it's paced that keeps their attention, it meets the standard that we want to present for the state, and it piques their interest too. I mean, we really could, and Scott has and I have too, really kind of wax for a long time on all of the stories and all the things, but it's the point of bringing it to the actual coursework, taking the time, explaining the real responsibilities and real things you have to do, and making sure that when they walk out of the class, they've gotten their money's worth, they've gotten their time worth, and it really was worthwhile for them.
One of the things, too, is having a PhD-holding professor such as myself running the program and actually teaching in the program. Because prior to becoming a professor and getting into academia, that's what I did. I ran a private investigation company down in Houston and loved it. And that put me through getting my graduate degree as well as my doctorate degree. So it was one of those things that just when I came up here to the University of North Texas, they really embraced. I mean, I've just had some wonderful people from in administration as well as, my boss, Peggy Tobolowski, and just embracing this program and saying there is a need out there for people to learn these type of skills and professionalize our business. Because if you think about our business in the past, it's always been kind of sleazy or seedy and things like this. But our job here is – like we talked about earlier, it's more to people come to us with problems, and we're problem solvers, and that's what our training program will do is it does encompass that, and we teach our students that on a regular basis, that you're here to solve somebody's problem. You're not here to do strange things or sleazy things. You're here to solve a problem that they have.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We're here with Scott Belshaw and Tim Quinn of the University of North Texas Professional Development Institute's Private Investigation Certification Program. Let's go on the phones first to Carrollton and speak with Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well, thank you.
I wanted to ask if this research, if this type of work could be used for opposition research.
Absolutely. Opposition research, and I'm assuming you're talking about in the political realm, obtaining information on certain people. Absolutely. It's all about research and learning different techniques of research. Research is a very broad field, but finding information, background checks on people, things like this, opposition research, absolutely. In our program, we talk about opposition research too.
And I've also done competitive intelligence research, political investigations, and those sorts of things. So absolutely, the skill sets can apply.
Does certification in Texas give a private investigator any special rights or privileges that the average citizen doesn't have?
Generally, no. What the certification what the licensing in Texas does, it doesn't allow you to get any more information than, say, a police officer or anything like that, and not at all. It regulates our business, mm-hmm. and it allows our business to become professional. The Texas Department of Public Safety is really big on that. They're trying to find a way to professionalize this business. And it doesn't give you any sort of wearing a badge or have some sort of cool ID like you see on TV and things like that, or carrying a gun. It's no different than if you were an average citizen. However, it is against the law for a person to practice as a private investigator without a license in the state. It's actually a Class A misdemeanor, which is punishable to up to a year in jail as well as a $2,000 fine. So it's pretty high if you do practice without a license.
We have an email here from Juan who asks, how much is the course and what's the typical return on investment? I think he's asking how much he could make.
Well, generally, our program is $2,800, $2,895. And what you're getting is you're getting 4.5 months worth of intense training working with professionals in the field, as well as PhD holding faculty such as myself, as well as experienced private investigators such as Tim and Karen Hewitt, who's also one of our board members. And one of the things that you're getting is all this experience and learning how to do this type of business. When you get out there in the field, you can, when you do start practicing, you're networking with other private investigators and you can do very well. So the return on your investment is all relative, but I think what you can do is – Tim, do you have anything on
that? Well, yeah, there's actually a couple things. One thing that we haven't talked about yet, and I told your class this, the first class we had, the level of instructors that Scott's picked for the Dallas course, and then it goes through with the Houston course coming up in the fall too. With 19 years of experience, I'd sit in any one of their classes. Those teachers are fantastic, and they literally are the best at what they do. So from a standpoint of the exposure you're going to get as a student in the course to the instructors that we have, it's unparalleled. The second thing is the nuance is we teach you how to run the business too. We actually have a module, how to operate a PI business, which is going to talk about not only the bare knuckles things that you need, licensing, insurance, good employees, that sort of thing. But it's also going to teach you about the ways you can build your own business around your skill sets. Our classes are small enough to where my expectation is to spend time with the students and say, all right, you have a background in education or you have a background with process serving or what have you. How can you take your business to the next level? So that's where your return on investment is going to be, is what you take away from it and what you can build out of it.
Bringing that mentoring, I mean, exactly. You actually serve as the instructors in this program, and when I've talked to all the instructors, I've told them you're actually going to serve as a mentor. And a lot of the instructors have even said, well, I'd like to pull some employees from our program. You know, if we see good students out there, people who have really acquired the skill set, we would easily hire them in a heartbeat. So something like that. I think that is another return mm-hmm. you will get on your investment in our program.
Exactly.
Outside of the program, is it expensive to acquire the technology you need to really do this effectively?
Baseline equipment, if you're going to be in the industry or part of the industry that requires surveillance and using cameras and phone or recording technology, truly prices go down every day. So, mm-hmm. I mean, to get a good camera, and most people have a good video camera, a good still shot camera, a good video digital recorder for doing interviews or for, keeping notes if you're in the car, that sort of thing, the cost is – is really no more than a hobby cost, to be honest, to get really good equipment. Now, you can take it to the next level, and you can, if you're doing covert operations where you're in settings where you don't want to be observed or you really don't want to be seen if you're in a public setting or things, you can get the items like the eyeglass cameras or the pocket pen cameras and all those sorts of things. And there's not a high level of cost to even those items at this point.
No, there's not. I mean, look at the iPhone. Look at all the different things you can do with an iPhone. It's got a camera on there. It's got a microphone on there. You could almost – I've known private investigators who run a business just running it using that.
Right.
What's interesting about that is that no one is going to look at you twice if you are waving your iPhone around.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go next to Moses in Dallas. Hi, Moses.
Oh, good afternoon.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Yeah. My name is Moses Duroshao. I wanted to know when the next session will start and the qualifications required to be a student. And is it holding in Denton, LO, or is also holding in the UNT in Dallas?
Well, thank you, Moses, for that. Generally, what we do is our program, the next program is going to start in July. And here in Dallas. And what we're going to do is we do not hold them in Denton. One of the reasons why is because the Metroplex is so big, we decided to kind of have a central location in around the Irving area. So we will be holding it around in one of the universities around in the Irving area is where we have it there. But the qualifications to be in the program, what we're looking at is we're looking at somebody who kind of reads and can speak English very well and stuff like this, and generally has a high school, graduated from high school and stuff like this. Licensing is a separate issue. If it's something that you're interested in becoming a licensed private investigator and getting your own license, then the state has its own requirements, but not too stringent, of course. You know, generally criminal record type issues and stuff like this if you've had any prior problems. But generally, overall, to get into our program, it's very simple. It's very easy to do.
Talk a little bit about how you evaluate students. Is it just Scantrons and essay tests, or is there some kind of practical exam where they have to dig up the dirt on somebody?
Well, in my class, I actually gave, essay exams, and I give homeworks on a regular basis and essay exams so that I feel that they've understood the material. Do they understand the type of information? Are they going to be prepared for the next class? Because our program builds upon each other. The first class that they will take is a foundation of private investigations, which is literally a class on how to become a private investigator and what is the private investigative industry. We talk about myths that all private investigators ride around in red Ferraris. You know, I've been a private investigator for a number of years, and I've never owned a red Ferrari.
Maybe you got a blue one, right?
Yeah, I got a blue one. But, things like that. What are the myths? So we talk about that, and then we break it into, you start moving into your legal class where we actually have an attorney from Houston who comes in and actually speaks to the class and teaches the class on legal liabilities. His job was, he was the general counsel for numerous investigation and security firms. So we would go to him, and if we had a question regarding some legality issue, he's teaching our class on how to the legal aspects on how to stay out of trouble with the law, all the way into the research classes, the surveillance classes that we taught. Our surveillance class in Dallas is wonderful because it's taught by a retired FBI agent. So with a wealth of knowledge when it comes to surveillance and dealing with, that type of background, undercover work and things like this. So we're looking forward to it. And then all the way, then we kind of tailor all the classes to the end where Karen Hewitt, who is been a private investigator in the Metroplex for a very long time, almost 20 years, and she teaches you basically how to run a private investigation office, how to, the day-to-day operations of running a business. Texas Department of Public Safety has been really upset about a lot of times because there's such a huge turnover rate in our field because people just don't know how to run a basic business, especially a private investigator business. If you have a PI business and you've ran it for more than 2 years, you're doing very good. Mm-hmm. So our kind of tailor down to the end of our program talks about that, talks about the business aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the wrap up at the end, we have a special topics class that's going to take what we've learned so far, kind of wrap it up, but also give the opportunity to look at some of the newest trends, some of the newest topics, maybe have some new speakers in and things like that. In my classes, we'll have practical work, practical homework assignments, and some very specific reviews of the work that we've done. But again, this is different than a fully academic setting. It's more of a professional education setting that has standards set by the state. So we're really looking forward to the results that we get at the end of it, the way we have it set up. So.
Absolutely.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Next on the line, we have Steve in Denton. Hey, Steve.
Yes. I was going to enroll in some coursework and try to get certified as a private investigator sometime back a few years ago. And a person who was a private investigator said, don't do it. The laws had changed to the point that it had an ironic effect. Trying to even look up simple license plate numbers to see who owns a car, for instance, he said that the forms to be filled out, that had gotten tighter, and the forms to be filled out could just as easily be done by an individual as by the private investigator himself, and that he had no more access to such data anymore because the laws had changed. Has any of that been changed or any newer laws in regards to those things?
Well, a lot of the – and you're right on a lot of that. A lot of the new laws have changed to kind of curtail like information regarding Social Security numbers and to prevent identity theft and things like this. But again, what we teach in our program is more of a – it's all about research. It's about gathering as much information you can on somebody and gathering as much information you can on people. And again, there's – I hate to use this kind of cliche, but there's, you know, 100 ways to skin a cat kind of thing. And there's to find one specific amount of information, there's 100 ways to find that information. The key here is all about research. It's all about going in there and trying to find this information and looking around for it. It's not just the easy way of going to a database and pulling it up. It's, you know, using certain analytical skills to be able to put all this stuff together. So when your client is asking you for, I'm trying to locate a long lost love or a friend or something like that, and that friend's name is John Smith. Well, there's a million John Smiths out there in the world. But the key to this business is being able to analyze that information and narrowing it down to the client, to the specific person that your client's looking for. That's a skill, and that's a skill that we train in our program how to do.
And there is public access to things like publicdata.com and programs like this that have limited information that is usually either out of date or ineffective from a standpoint of professional use in an investigator's business. The difference is, as a private citizen, I could go get that information, but I can't hold myself out as a private investigator and sell that information or sell those analytical skills and putting it all together as a solution to a problem that person presented to me. So that's the difference in being able to just do it as a private citizen versus as a licensed investigator.
Tim Quinn is with us. He is an instructor in the University of North Texas Professional Development Institute's Private Investigation Certification Program. Chair and Executive Director Scott Belshaw is with us as well. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from summer youth programs at SMU in Plano, where kids can create, design, and think their way to a memorable summer. Details online at smu.edu/summerfun.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with two representatives from UNT's Professional Development Institute's Private Investigation Certification Program. You can learn more about it at pdi.org. Scott Belshaw is Chair and Executive Director, and Tim Quinn is an instructor in the program. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-800-933-5372, and that's where we find Terry in Dallas. Hi, Terry.
Hello. Yes, it's getting to be a small world. And a premise of the question is around that, is there any interstate commerce laws crossing the state? Let me further that and extend it to international laws, and what kind of problems are you encountering with the new security system that our government has? So those are three parts.
Thanks for your
address,
call.
Please.
Generally, a lot of the I think what you're probably talking about is reciprocity with different states and things like this. When you're dealing with different states across state lines, It's one of those things where you, when you have a license in Texas, you're only licensed in Texas. So if you go to another state to actually actively work, generally that other state will require you to maybe make contact with another private investigator and things like that. But international work, too, generally on the international side of things, there's really no licensing type thing. And a lot of other foreign countries, anytime I've had an international type case, I've always gone to another private investigator, maybe in that specific country or something like this, and kind of networked with them and said, hey, I've got a case over there. I've got kind of an issue over there that I need to deal with. You know, can you help me out here and things like that? So that's kind of how it's – that's generally how it's done.
And our program will talk about the awareness that you have stepping into certain situations, working in, across state lines in other states, the reciprocity laws that he was talking about. It's not enough for them to say – well, there's 17 different states that have reciprocity agreements with the state of Texas, but you still have to have licenses in those states, paying for those licenses, paying for the insurance, or work with a licensed investigator there. So we'll talk about the awareness that you have receiving business, accepting business, and doing business in places other than the state of Texas.
What professional guidelines are there with regard to falsely representing yourself in order to get some information that your client needs?
Well, generally, if you falsely represent yourself as a police officer, again, that's a crime.
Right.
That's a felony in itself. Things like this. If you're – you might be talking about pretexting a lot of times, which is
– Yeah, like this is his brother-in-law and I forgot his passcode or something, you know.
The laws have been – and a lot of your callers have mentioned that about the different law changes in the laws and stuff like this. What they're looking at, the federal government and the federal government and the state government has kind of narrowed things down to – if it's you're using pretexting to obtain financial information, then that is considered illegal. And that's what I've told my investigators, and we talk about that in our class, especially in our legal class, about you do not use that information. You do not go obtain financial information, things like this. But sometimes representing yourself, if you're just calling somebody on the phone to obtain information, is kind of part of the trade. It's kind of part of – but to obtain certain financial information or to obtain – you know, to go beyond that ethic that we talk about is clearly, you know, in violation – can be clearly in violation of the law.
And there's code law and case law that helps direct us in many cases as to – where the lines and boundaries are that we talk about as well. So there are lines drawn, but when it comes down to it, it's your decision. So
do clients tend to understand those boundaries?
No, they generally don't. My experience has been a lot of times they'll call you up and say, well, can't you just call somebody and say you're a police officer? No, you cannot do that. That's a crime. You know, I won't do that. Or I had a client one time called me up and he said, I need you to find my ex-wife's or my current wife's boyfriend. Okay, well, you kind of think about that for a second and you're like, okay.
Why?
Well, yeah, why? What are you going to do with this information if I find it? And the next question out of that man's out of his mouth was, you know, none of your business. And I'm like, well, red flags are flying up all over the place in my office at that point because it's like, no. And these aren't the cases to take, and these aren't you don't want to put yourself in that situation. Yeah. It's not worth it. And what we have found over the years, within the past probably 15, 20 years, that private investigators are starting to get to that point where they're realizing it's not worth it because this is a very regulated industry and it's a technical game. It's when you're out there. I mean, there's finding information on people is not difficult to do. You just got to kind of know where to look. There's multiple ways to find information on people.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Next, we go to Jim in Denton. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead, please.
You mentioned that in part of the class you try to customize people's interests and backgrounds. Mine happens to be working with churches. I was curious what experience you have and what advice you have in terms of what in the field of PI work is relevant to churches and what have you seen?
Well, thanks for calling. It's interesting. I personally have background in doing background investigations for churches and schools. When I've had my own licensed company, I've offered those up at no cost to the institutions that I've been a part of, either the churches that I were a part of or the schools that I went to. And so they took advantage of those. The employment ministry programs that I work with, we do the same thing. And we talk about a church or a church that's perhaps involved in the care of children really needing to take the time. And they have a really high awareness of it right now to make sure the people who are working for them or who are even volunteering for those organizations have the proper background or are screened for criminal or for less than character building activities that may have been in their background. A lot of times you'll see companies offering those services at a discount or for free to those type of institutions. But if you're working for that institution, I think bringing that message of you need to take care of who's on your property, it goes for churches as well as companies as well as individuals in their homes too. So,
what kind of liability would an investigator have if that person in good faith sort of conducted an investigation, recommended that somebody not be hired, and then the information turned out to be false or to somehow have come together in a way that, that mischaracterized the person that they're reporting on?
There's a huge liability there. It all depends on negligence, how far, if something like that happened and let's say got into the civil court realm and maybe a lawsuit was filed or something like that against the insurance company that you're dealing with and things like this, what would happen is they would look back and see how was the private investigator negligent? What steps did they take? But when you're doing a background check, you don't want to just look at the person's name. If I want to do a background check and I just ran the name Tim Quinn and that was it, and I pulled up multiple Tim Quinns and said, oh, that's probably him, and there's a person's information there, and then gave it to the client and said, here you go, versus checking the date of birth or even going as far as checking various indicators on there, such as what they looked like, things like this, you know, narrowing it down to as much as I can and saying to the client, here's the information, here's what I found on this individual. It's all about the information that your client gives you, what the connection between that information your client gives you and the information that you found. So if your client gave you this information, the name and date of birth, and you said, here's a person I found with this name and date of birth, here's, you know, which compares it to the information the client gives you, then, of course, that decreases your liability there. But increases it, it's all about negligence. It's all about how far did you go to actually do the job. There's private investigators out there who will just pull up the first person and say, okay, here you go. Fortunately, those are the ones we're trying to kind of weed out of the field.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones now, and this time we'll speak to Dora in Garland. Hi, Dora.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I was calling. A lot of my friends always call me to look up people or to find different information. And then one night I was at an event, and a lady was like, you need to use your skills to be an investigator and investigate people's husbands. Is this something that would be done during the course, or is that not the type of investigating?
It's funny you should mention that. One of the attendees in our current class right now started out her introduction with, well, you know, my family always came to me when we needed to find someone or needed to look up someone. The skills that you're talking about, the finding of information, the collecting of information, the analyzing of the information, that's exactly what we do in the courses. It's exactly what a private investigator does. If you have a desire to do that, if you have an interest in that type of work, and sometimes it's good, sometimes it's glamorous, sometimes it's fast, but sometimes it's hard, sometimes it's technical, and sometimes it's drudgery to go through as many things as you have to go through to get to a result. It's definitely worth it for you to look further into the field and into our program as well. So
there's a huge need for women in this business.
Absolutely.
And I tell my students this all the time. It's think about it late at night. If there's a knock at the door, okay, and you know, say that there's a male behind the door, and there, all of a sudden there's another male standing in front of the door, and it's 10, 11 o'clock at night. Is that person going to open that door? Probably not. But what if it's 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, there's a knock at the door, and there's a male behind the door, and there's a female in front of that door? There's more likely that person's going to answer that. The guy's going to open the door. And if make the reverse, what if there's a female in that house, and there's a knock at the door, 10, 11 o'clock at night, and there's another female out there? They're probably going to open the door too, because it's that kind of – and that's what I try to tell the students. It's all about is, you know, perceptions on people. Women can get information easier, a lot easier than a lot of men can. And then there's certain situations that you can put men in, and then they can get information from women. So it's kind of working together. But women in this field, it's a wonderful field for women, and I think more women need to get into this field because, you know, even in my company, I employed women that just could get into situations that were just like, wow, how did you get that information? And they're just like, just my intuition.
Let's go next on the phones to Hemant in Irving. Hi, Hemant.
Yes, hi. I was just wanting to know if this course was tax deductible and the skill sets learned on this course.
I think we couldn't quite make out the last part of your question, but is the course tax deductible? Was the first part of the question.
That's a good question to probably ask your CPA. Generally, I don't. I'm not sure on that one.
From an individual purchase perspective, I wouldn't think so. Doing it from a company perspective, perhaps it falls in the training realm. So, but yeah, CPA would be the first person to ask.
So we've gotten an idea today of how much information can be found out about us by a qualified investigator. Can you talk for a minute about what you recommend to your friends and family about protecting their own information, particularly when they're online or leaving sort of any public trace of their activities in the world?
Well, the interesting thing is there's really no just tipping your foot in there.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in, you're all in. If you're setting up a Facebook page or a LinkedIn page or a Twitter page, the information you put out there is there. It's permanent. It's not going to go away. Maybe it can be modified, but it's going to be there for people to find or to look up. And what's interesting is one of the things that grabbed me about this business is early on, there were a lot of text-based aggregators of information 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Today, the shows like CSI and all those shows that show the visual-based information screens that people are waving their hands across and pictures are coming up, they're here. They're now. They're real. They're not Hollywood. And private investigators and folks with the proper license to access can get that information. And so, for example, at the conference last week, I ran that same kind of search that 5 years ago would have come up with my name, Social Security number, addresses that I'd lived at, folks who had lived next to me, information that you use to find people. That's the key. Today, you're finding information, all of my public and social media pages, places I've gone to shop, Amazon.com, all the books that I've looked at, everything I've read online, blogs that I have, all those sorts of things. So the trick is to make sure you're putting out positive information that's accurate and complete. If you're going to do it, know that it's going to be public. If you're a parent, make sure you monitor your kids' usage as much as you can. There's a lot of tools that can help you do that, and I'd take advantage of those as much as you could.
Absolutely, Tim. I mean, protecting yourself, too. And something as basic as, you know, what I have found is when you have your bills and you're done with your bills, shred that stuff. Buy a shredder. And that's one thing that a lot of people don't have around their home is, you know, when they fill out your stuff and you mail off your bills and things like this, or even online, you kind of collect that stuff. And a lot of people do is they kind of toss it in the garbage. Don't do that, because, again, people go through your garbage, things like this. You become an easy target for identity theft.
The last thing I want to ask you about is, was there a TV or a movie character that made you think when you were little boys, this is what I want to do with my life?
For me, it wasn't necessarily a character. It was more of just the intrigue of the business. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like, you know, you watch the old Magnum PI shows and see the red Ferrari and think, wow, one day I'm going to have a red Ferrari. And then,
you know,
of course,
stash.
Absolutely. And then you kind of realize how much those red Ferraris actually cost and, you know, things like this. But it's just the intrigue of the business. And I'm just like a lot of the callers have been and, you know, a lot of the students have said, you know, you were the kind of person that people would come to you with problems, or people would come to you and say, hey, you know, can you help me out? I got this issue or something like this. And you would always be willing to talk and things like this. It's almost like a role in counseling is what you do in this field. And I just enjoy helping people and talking to people and things like this. And that's what got me really into the business.
Last 20 seconds goes to you, Tim.
Same thing. Getting through school and meeting folks like Scott and working with attorneys and different people in positions that I'd had, put me in a position to actually help people and do things like this. This particular industry gives you a chance to do it in a unique way, in a really exciting way sometimes, and a really satisfying way. So that's what put me there.
Tim Quinn is an instructor in the University of North Texas's Institute for Professional Development Institute. They've got a new private investigation certification program. Scott Belshaw is chair and executive director of that program. You can learn more about how to become a private investigator at pdi.org. Guys, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.